Chapter 6. Nearly an hour had passed, enough time for Tony to drive all the way from the Air Force base to a parking lot outside of the Seven Falls Trail, before Tony felt comfortable enough to speak up. While he had given Kaz some surface-level details in the drive, he had been too rattled by the possibility that Pickett might have noticed the missing ledgers and given chase immediately. Moreover, until he had a chance to look at the evidence again, he couldn't be certain he wasn't hallucinating because of grief. He had worked through similar distress before, without incident, but he hated jumping to conclusions in these emotional states. Both the fear and his second-guessing had kept him so focused on the road, on putting as much distance between themselves and the academy as quickly as he could, that it had kept him from running his mouth too freely. He didn't want to miss a turn or lose a second because he'd been distracted explaining the labyrinth of his own suspicions to Kaz. This, in turn, only served to leave Kaz further incensed, so worked up, by the time they stopped at the parking lot, he was fit to explode.
"God fucking damn it, Tony, would you tell me what's going on? What's gotten into you? If it's about Marshall, then talk. You know me, I'm here for you. But don't go pulling this silent treatment on me, you're freaking me out."
Tony shook his head as he unzipped his jacket, pulled the two ledgers out, and handed them to Kaz, who regarded them with nonplussed suspicion. "It's these, what I found on Pickett's desk." Kaz opened them up side by side and flipped through them, but seemed incapable of drawing the connections that Tony was afraid were there. Eventually, he closed them shut and handed them back to Tony, fixing his friend with a look of concern that suggested he thought Tony might be suffering from some kind of grief-related nervous breakdown.
"You're going to have to explain this one to me, buddy, because whatever it is you're seeing, I'm too stupid or too unimaginative to piece it together. Two different books of water levels and logs with the same dates and names sure look suspicious, but what are you getting at here, exactly?"
"I'm saying that the fire on base, I'm saying that Marshall's death might not have been the accident we were led to believe it was." Kaz cocked his eyebrow at that and gave Tony a side eye that suggested he thought his friend truly was cracking under the stress of his long flight and his grief.
"I get it if you're dealing with something, Tony. I am too. And I understand if Pickett's reaction rubbed you the wrong way, because it sure as hell pissed me off. Hell, I was the one unloading on you about his shady arrangements during the reconstruction. But all that was just my frustration talking. Trust me when I say there's no funny business going on with the pipes. I mean, not anything weirder than normal. I know you were busy back when this was all going on with that shit in Germany, but I was here for those years after the contaminated groundwater caused a huge ruckus, and I can tell you that that shit was vetted thoroughly, inside and out. I mean, I should know. I was stuck in meeting hell for a year because of that shit, and I can tell you that the four places they never stopped talking about, the four elements they said had to be replaced at all costs, were our fire stations, our spray test areas, our pipe systems, and the reservoir that supplies the water from our fire stations. We had inspectors come in to double-check that everything was on the up-and-up. All the work was handled by unaffiliated third-party contractors who had no reason to cut corners and who knew their reputations were on the line if anything happened. It's a tragedy, but these things happen with systems this complex."
"Kaz, most of my adult life has revolved around fixing systems this complex, and while you're right that accidents do happen from time to time, I can assure you that on a project this important, with this much scrutiny on it, every pipe used and every connection would be quadruple-checked. What I can also assure you is that nobody who's doing honest work keeps multiple ledgers around."
"What about for backup?" Kaz retorted. "To make sure that all their calculations check out."
"Sure, you might make a copy of your records to go back and double-check, but I took a look.
Here, see? Tony reached across to Kaz and opened up both books, thumbed through one and then the other until they were both showing September of 2024. The problem isn't just that they don't match. It's that they're mismatched to a ridiculous degree. I mean, just look at this, Tony said, as he traced his finger across first one record and then the other, tapping his nail to highlight the massive disparity in levels. In one, we're looking at a table that shows the requisite number of liters per area. Everything here looks great to me. Kaz nodded along, with an apprehension that suggested he was halfway between sincerely following along and halfway doing it merely to humor his friend. It's this second one that's got water levels suspiciously low. Kaz grunted. Nothing you couldn't just explain by a margin of error or accident, huh? Tony shook his head. Not even a bit. Sure, if this was a few dozen liters here and there, you might. But even that would suggest some kind of runoff and leakage, enough that Pickett would need to call somebody, and fast, before he had another controversy like the polluted groundwater you were just talking about. The differences we're talking about here are massive, the kind of thing that could endanger a whole operation. The kind of thing we'd bring in investigators to handle. So what? Kaz asked, raising his shoulders in a frustrated shrug. You think this indicates some kind of plot? Like Pickett wanted to burn down the barracks? That he wanted Marshall dead? I don't mean to undermine you, Tony. You're the expert here. But even by my lights, that sounds fishy. I never said they wanted Marshall dead, Tony said, his voice heavy with sorrow. He was a nobody to them. Hardly the person Pickett would have given a damn about. Fuck. If Williams hadn't been away for his grandfather's funeral, that would have been the son of top brass dead, and just how bad would that have looked? No, truth be told, I don't even think they meant for the fire to happen. In fact, I think it's the worst thing that could have happened to them, because it meant people might notice. The fire was an accident. Pickett's story that it was caused by an electrical short makes sense. Certainly nothing else contradicts it. What doesn't make sense is that on the same week as an Academy cadet dies in a fire due to a faulty sprinkler, that Pickett would be consulting two wildly different reports on water levels of the campus. Pickett, the man who, like you said, was in charge of handling all renovations to the water infrastructure on base these last 4 years. I'm telling you, Kaz, something's wrong here. I've investigated this kind of thing dozens of times, sifted through hundreds of copied ledgers that report different outcomes, different supplies, different levels, and it always, always points to fraud or cover-up. The last thing you want when you've got these kinds of discrepancies is journalists swarming the place, asking everybody questions left and right. Kaz shook his head in anger, as if he could drive away this slowly dawning nightmare with enough force.
There's a drought going on in Colorado, Tony. Has been for a long time. You know that better than anyone. Could be one book was for expected levels, and one for the actual levels, right?
The discrepancy between the ledgers is too big, Kaz. No matter how bad the drought is, the Air Force Academy would find some way to work with more than a third of their projected water capacity. If nothing else, they'd at least announce this problem to the public. Nobody wants a repeat of the contamination fiasco.
Kaz wasn't buying it, not yet, though Tony could tell by just the slightest quiver under his left eye that he was coming around. That all his remaining skepticism was a defensive mechanism, meant to avoid having to deal with the very painful reality that they were confronting a betrayal and a conspiracy of a very high order.
Then why would Pickett leave this shit out on his desk for anybody to just see? If you're right, and he's trying to cover up some giant conspiracy, then that hardly makes sense, does it?
Tony stopped for a second to consider. During the drive, he hadn't really given himself a chance to consider what exactly the ledger might point to. Quick as he'd been to jump to the conclusion that something was up,
That was only because he'd dealt with enough shady brokers and contractors and auditors to know that anybody who kept multiple sets of conflicting records around was up to no good. What mischief they were cooking up varied from instance to instance, though, and he was too cautious to jump to conclusions about the specifics when he didn't have enough evidence to point one way or the other. He was an engineer, first and foremost, after all, and engineering was a vocation that demanded you avoid clouding your judgment by jumping to presuppositions that inevitably led you down the wrong path. I can't rightly say, but you saw how relaxed he was until the moment that Orlando guy showed up, how he projected that air of collected, calm friendliness until the second that lug stepped in the door. Then it all went to shit. I don't have enough to go on, but my guess is that the reason he had the ledgers on his desk had something to do with Orlando. Maybe Pickett had been running some calculations for him and forgot the ledgers, which is why he went back inside so quickly, why he was so frazzled. But what the fuck would a U.S. wet work specialist want with the Air Force Academy's water tables, Tony? That's insane. Tony nodded along. There was something comforting in knowing that his friend found his setup as perplexing as he himself did. Completely insane, which makes me all the more suspicious. But what would explain Orlando being there in a way that made any sense? I'm not saying these two things are definitely connected, or even how they are, but the overlap between them is remarkable given the timing, right? Reluctant, Kaz answered Tony's question with an approving, "Sure." He hesitated for a moment, as if Tony's own propensity for reflection had infected him before continuing on.
"But what on earth could all this be pointing to? I mean, fuck. It's not like the Air Force Academy is sitting on any kind of nuclear stockpile or anything. Maybe Northern Command, I could understand, sure, but the Academy's just a bunch of students and old men with a few pieces of military hardware sitting around. If you wanted intel, you'd infiltrate NORAD or Northern Command. If you wanted to stage a coup, you'd hit up an army base for the weapons. What on earth is valuable at the Academy?"
Much as Tony wanted to offer an easy assurance for his friend, he simply couldn't bring himself to do it. There was nothing he could imagine that would make sense of this, but despite his incomprehension, Tony was certain of one thing. He had never felt so violated before. If his hunch was right, and he had no reason to believe it was, somebody was targeting his home, his friends, and his family, betraying the community they had all built together, and doing it through the one thing Tony valued more than any other. Water. There was no resource so fundamental as water, nothing so foundational in providing for everyone and everything. Food might be more satisfying to consume, certainly, but agriculture and livestock both depended on massive quantities of the stuff. Similarly, electricity, sanitation, petrochemicals, every product produced around the globe was utterly beholden to that simple three-molecule structure that was so taken for granted by everybody but Tony and his ilk. To realize that it was now being subverted, targeted in a way that exposed the vulnerable to injury, rankled Tony in ways he could not begin to understand. It wasn't simply insult added to injury. This was outright mockery, so far as he was concerned. "I don't know, friend," Tony offered, with something like defeat. "I can't even begin to imagine what would make us such a target, but the fact that Pickett was keeping two ledgers instead of just fabricating the information makes me think that somebody, somewhere, needs that information, which is why he had it out at all. It's not just for his personal information, but because there's an interest here that needs that water, or at least needs to know how much of it is going where."
"Fuck," Kaz wheezed, with a conviction that suggested he had finally come around to seeing it as Tony did, to understanding the severity of their situation, and the certainty that this was not, as he might have hoped, some accident
or freak discovery.
What do we do?
First thing is, I need to make a copy of this information. Pickett's going to notice that the ledgers went missing sooner rather than later, and he's sharp enough to put two and two together. When he comes looking for these records, we're going to need something to fall back on to counter him, or even possibly blackmail him. I've got a safety deposit box at the bank that can hold the originals. In the meantime, I'll get the copies to somebody who knows better how to handle this kind of leak.
Lisa, huh?
Tony nodded. She still owes me a favor for giving her contacts when the groundwater contamination story broke.
Good idea. She's reliable. Smart, too. And you know I don't say that about most journalists.
Tony smiled at that, amused, despite his own belief in the necessity of good investigative journalists, especially in this era of wild obfuscation and rapidly circulating misinformation, to find that his friend's hard-bitten obsession with straightforward speakers and thinkers still maintained.
She's one of the best, he added diplomatically.
You mind if I drop you off here? I hate to do this to you, but I can't risk going back to the base in this car. The chance that Pickett will spot us is far too high. I'll cover the cost of your Uber or Lyft or whatever it is you're using.
Kaz dismissed his friend's concern with a wave of his hand. To underline it, he opened the passenger door and began to step down from Tony's beat-up old Mazda.
Forget it, Tony. I've been meaning to enjoy a hike before the weather gets too cold and all the leaves start dying anyway. Far as I'm concerned, you're just giving me an excuse to do it.
I'll call you after I contact Lisa. Keep you posted, Tony called out, a promise Kaz only responded to with a thumbs up as he shut the door behind him. Tony smiled wanly as he watched his friend take his first tentative steps up the trailhead towards the Seven Falls. He wondered, paranoid, if this might not be the last time he'd seen the man, limping forlorn, yet resolute, into those dark woods. If perhaps Pickett wasn't already onto them and had goons trailing in hot pursuit. He swiveled his head back and forth to take one last look at the lot, considered the cars of the only other hikers there. A beaten-up yellow Acura of some unexceptionable 90s model, some forgotten make of Ford with a faded red paint scheme. Nobody was around in the middle of an early fall afternoon. Then, assured there was no way these belonged to Pickett, they had, he remembered, been there when they drove up, opened the ledgers to consider them once again to look over the records from the beginning. At first, the differences between the last 2 years of tables was negligible. A few leaders here, another leader there, maybe a dozen or so on a bad month to suggest that things were predictably imperfect. No system was perfect or closed, after all. Soon, though, the discrepancies became too glaring to possibly ignore. Thousands upon thousands of leaders missing, then 10,000, then dozens of thousands of leaders. It was staggering the amount of liquid that was being moved out, and somewhat astounding to Tony that nobody had noticed this yet, or that only one person had been lost to this last fire. He kicked himself for a second for not asking if any of the sprinklers had been investigated for signs that they'd worked. Could it be that the only reason Marshall had died at all was because he was just unlucky enough to be near the blaze when it went off? It was a nightmare, with implications that immediately quashed even the smallest hope Tony had that he'd misinterpreted what he'd seen.
Whoever these people were, and whatever they were hoping to do, they had gotten brave enough, or careless enough, to start stealing quantities of water so massive it could only suggest something dark and strange. A bid by corporations to force other water holders into unfavorable deals? An attempt to force some kind of emergency seizure of reservoirs, aquifers, and dams? It couldn't be that this was the only instance of such massive theft, though. Tony was sure that there'd be reports of similar activity elsewhere.
Once back in Colorado Springs proper, he drove to Bancroft Park. Parked, then strode to the decrepit old payphone they still kept in the southwest corner. It was smart, he told himself, to avoid leaving a digital trail,
that might implicate anybody he caught up in his wake, if those ledgers suggested what he and Kaz suspected they might, but he felt vaguely absurd as he plunked the exact change into the slot, punched in Lisa's number, and leaned into the phone with the collar of his coat up. With all the war zones he'd been in, and all the day-to-day hell and pandemonium he'd lived through, there seemed something melodramatic about his playing at Film Noir PI, or Super Spy. But the sound of her voice over the phone jolted him from his self-conscious doubt and back into action. "Hello," she murmured, sounding as if she was too busy to be angry, but she was coming around to it any second now. "Can I ask who's calling me from an unidentified number? Or is this just another scam?" "Sorry for the impromptu call, Lisa, but it's Tony Rodriguez from Northern Command." For a second there was a silence. No doubt, Lisa needed a second to scan her mental database for the name. As one of the most connected and thorough investigative journalists in the area, it was unlikely she'd remember any name but those of her latest sources offhand, before she chimed back. "Oh, shit, Tony, yeah, hey, can I ask why you're calling me? I mean, not to be rude, but it's a little out of the blue, isn't it? And from this weird number." "I've got something I need to talk over with you. Sorry, but I can't say too much over the phone. Can you meet me at the Saigon Grill at 5? Again, she delayed a response, but this time, Tony could hear the sound of pages flipping furtively on the other end of the phone. Likely, she was checking her schedule. "You're cutting it a little close, but sure, that should work. I might be a little late to my son's soccer game, but my guess is he'll be too busy focused on guarding his goal to notice his mom was missing for a little while. But first, I gotta ask, you mind telling me what this is about, Tony? A little weird to have you call me out of the blue on a line I don't recognize, about an urgent meeting today. I mean, it's been, what, 4 years since our last contact? And even that was tangential."
"Sure. Listen, what do you know about the fire at the Air Force Academy this week?"
"Just the same things everybody else knows. There was a faulty connection in the pipes. Some poor kid died, and now the whole damn town's in an uproar over this."
"What would you tell me if I said there was no faulty connection?"
"Then I'd say, I'll see you at the Saigon Grill, 5 sharp. Oh, and Rodriguez?"
"Yes?"
"Dinner's on you."